Okay, we're beginning here on the last line of Chaf Gimel Mibet. Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin, Avishchiyah Kamed, Rabbi Yossi de Min Yukrat. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin used to learn in the Beit Midrash, Rabbi Yossi Bin Yukrat, Shvakei Va'ate de Kamed Ravashi. He decided to leave that Beit Midrash and go learn by Ravashi. Yomachad Shmai de Kagaris, and one day he heard him learning. It's not clear here, and Rashi brings both options down, whether it's Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin heard Rabbi Ashi saying this, or that Rav Ashi heard Rav Yossi Bar Avin saying this. But it's a quote from Shmuel, which is Amar Shmuel, Shulet Dag Min Hayam B'Shabbat, someone who takes a fish out of the sea on Shabbat, Kiven Shiavash Bo Kasela, if it dries up the amount of a sela, which is a coin in their time, Chayav, that person is Chayav HaChatat, for Rashi says over here, Netilat Nishama B'Shabbat, because he killed the fish on Shabbat, and it's the equivalent of Shechita, of Netilat Nishama, on Shabbat. And then he points out that there's no problem of tzedah, which would be the melacha of capturing or trapping, because the fish was already in captivity. It was inside of a basket, just submerged in the water. There was no violation of tzedah over here. The only thing they violated was netilat neshama. And what Rashi suggests over here is a case where he picked up the fish. The fish is still flopping around, and it dries out kesel, and then he tosses it back into the water. So you would think that maybe he shouldn't be chayav, because either the death happens by itself, or because the fish would survive. Shmuel's statement is that once it dries up the area of a sela, that already indicates that it's going to die, and it will not survive. That's because of the lack of oxygen that the fish has. And now, because it can't efficiently compensate when it goes back in the water for the deficiency in oxygen by filtering in through its gills the water, it won't survive this trauma. And therefore, you're going to be chayav to netilat neshama. And then if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says over here, chayav mishum tzedah umishum netilat neshama. That you're actually chayav two chatot over here. You're chayav a chatat because you did tzedah, and you're chayav chatat because you netilat neshama. And actually, both of them are going to happen simultaneously, because you're taking it out of the water, which is the tzedah, or capturing it from the water, which is the tzedah, and then it's netilat neshama. And what the Bnei Yeshua points out here is that maybe it's a process, which is that the taking it out of the water already is deemed to be the action of killing it, because when it dries out, kesela, it's going to be an irreversible death to the fish, and therefore you're going to be chayav, because you put that in motion and you set that up to happen. Now, you still have to wait to dry out kesela. If you were to toss it in before that happens, then maybe you would not be chayav, because you haven't completed the process of netilat neshama, of killing this fish. But Shmuel's din is important, because even the fish seemingly is still alive, once it's gone back to past that irreversible point, which he defines as drying out kesela, then you're chayav. Amar lei, so then Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin said, v'lei marmar uben snapirav. Why don't you mention the fact that it has to be the dried out area is under the fins? I mean, it's not anywhere on the fish, but specifically under the fins. That's where it's meaningful that it dries out. That's where the gills are found, and therefore it's much more impactful on the fish. And once it dries out there, that's the irreversible process that the fish has undergone. Amalei, v'lo sabar amar ha'id, the Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Avin amara. How could you just say this over without giving attribution to Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Avin, who was the author of this position? And we know, as Rashi notes over here from the Gemara and Megillah, Kol omer davar b'shem omro mevi geula deolam. Whoever says something over in the name of its originator, then they bring a geula deolam, and they bring proof from the fact that Esther says b'shem Mordechai, and that brings about the geula of Purim. So over here, he's saying to this individual who's piping up and saying, well, don't you have to add in that there's a qualification of where it dries out in order to be the irreversible death of the fish? So say it in the name of Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Avin, who's the one who qualifies it. Amalei ananihu, I am him. Meaning that Rav Ash was not aware of the fact that the new individual in the Beit Midrash, the person learning by him, was Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Avin. He kept a low profile. He was anonymous. And Rav Ash is learning, and then Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Avin comes in and pipes up and makes that qualification. And Rav Ashi chastises him for not saying it in the name of Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Avin, and he says, I don't have to say it in his name, because I am him, and therefore I don't need to say it. Didn't you wish to learn in the Beit Midrash, Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat? What are you doing over here? This isn't your Beit Midrash. You have a different Rebbe. Amalei, hey, yes, that's where I used to learn. Why did you leave his Beit Midrash and come learn over here? Malay Gavra Dal Brave Albrate Lochas. Person who is not merciful on his children, both his son and his daughter, lead the Dihechayas. How is he gonna have any rachamim or any mercy on me? Meaning that it's dangerous to learn with him because he is very strict and he's makpid on every little thing and he treats his children with such strictness to the point of being a little bit punitive, then if I'm his talmid, which I don't even rise to the level of a child, then certainly I'm not going to get the benefit of the doubt and I'm going to end up being hurt by being in his shir or learning by him. And now the Gemara says, Bray Mahi, what was the incident with his son where he didn't have rachamim, he didn't have mercy on his son? Yomachad habu agrile agire v'davro. Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat hired workers to work in his field. Nagaluhu, the day went on, it got late in the day. V'loaituluhu rifta, and he didn't bring them their food. Part of their salary, part of their wages was his feeding them. So he hadn't brought the food in time, and it was getting late in the day. Amalei levrei, so they said to his son, meaning to Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat's son, Kafinan, we're starving. V'yatvei tute te'enata, they were sitting below a fig tree. Amar te'ena te'ena. The son of Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat says, fig tree, hotzio perutayich, v'yochlu polei abo. Bring out your fruit. Obviously, it wasn't fruiting at that time. It was not carrying or bearing fruit. And he did it at a time when it wasn't supposed to bear fruit. He asked the tree to produce fruit in order to feed the workers of his father. Apiku v'achlu. The tree produced the fruit and they ate. Adachi v'achi atavua. In the interim, his father showed up. Don't suspect me in your minds. Don't get upset at me. The very reason that I'm late today is a mitzvah tarachno. I was working with a mitzvah. I was doing a mitzvah. And I was delayed until now, or I didn't finish dealing with the mitzvah until now, and I'm coming immediately after I finish dealing with the mitzvah. Amrlei, Rachmana Lishbach, be Hashem should satisfy you, Kechet Ashba'an Birach, the way that your son satisfied us. You know, we're not hungry, we got taken care of. And the way that we were taken care of, Hashem should take care of you. Amrlehu, Meicha, where'd you get the food? Where are you satisfied from? Amaru, Hachi Lachi Avamaset. They told over the story of what the son did. Amrlehu, Beniz, and then the father turns to the son, Atai Trachtet Konecha Lotziteina Perutash Lobizmana. You caused Hashem to do something that's extraordinary, unnatural, which is to cause the fig tree to fruit at a time that wasn't its season to fruit. Yes, safe, shalob izmano, mida keneg mida, then you should die not in your time. So just like you caused God to do something in an untimely fashion, so too you should meet an untimely death. So he's making a point to his son, which is that it's not the right thing to do. First of all, to perform miracles is somewhat problematic, and we're going to see that in the continuation of the Gemara today. And especially to perform miracles at a time where it's not the natural cycle or the natural season. So that's to perform a miracle that's not derech hateva, that's not through the natural process, because it's something that's so extraordinary. So he was chastising his son for that, which is maybe the proper thing to do, but the fact that he was then punitive about it and said to his son, just like you did something in an untimely fashion, you should die in an untimely fashion, that was something which showed no mercy or no kindness towards his son. And that he felt was inappropriate. And something that if he was to continue learning there, he would be subject to that wrath or to that possible punitive side of Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat. Brate Mahi, with his daughter, what was the story? Havialei Brata Baalat Yofi. He had a daughter who was beautiful. Yomachad Chazilau Gavra Davakarya Behutza. He saw this individual was digging under the reeds, meaning that he was somehow dismantling the fence that was around their chatzer, or he was opening it up, digging it up. And he was looking at Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat's daughter. I'm like, oh, my hi. So Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat says, what are you doing here? What are you peeping into our chatzer for? I'm like, hey, Rabbi, I'm not going to merit to marry her. At least I should get a chance to look at her and benefit from her beauty, enjoy her beauty. I'm like, that you cause pain to other creatures, meaning to other human beings. You should return to the dust from which you came, and you shouldn't cause other people to trip up or to be misled by your beauty. So it's clear that Rabbi Yossi bar Avin disagreed with the way that Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat conducted himself. We already spoke about the son, that maybe he was right, maybe in chastising him, but the fact that he was punitive about it was problematic. And over here, he also must have thought that his reaction was a little bit far-fetched, where he's saying that his daughter should die because of her beauty. First of all, it's not her fault that she's beautiful, so you would have to then say that maybe she was at fault because she knew that the guy was looking and didn't take herself away, or allowed herself to be looked at. So maybe she did have some culpability over here. But nevertheless, there are other ways to deal with it. One possibility is to daven that she shouldn't be so beautiful. That might be a possibility, although that might go against his other principle, which is we don't ask God to do things that are unnatural. Or He could have prayed that people would not be struck by her beauty or would not be led astray by her beauty. He could have done other things, or he could have worked with his daughter on this and figured out a way to deal with it rather than saying that she should die and return to the afar, to the dust of the earth that she came from, which again was very punitive. And now another story about Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat that talks about his chassidut or his high level of integrity, which is Habilei Aruchamra. He had this donkey, Kedahavu Agre La'ko Yoma. He used to rent it out on a daily basis to people who needed it. Lo'orta Abu Mishadri La Agra Gaba Va'achil Beimara. Every evening they used to send the payment for the rental on the back of the donkey back to the house of its owner, back to Rabbi Yossi ben Yukrat. Bitafula Obatzila, if they gave too much money, or they gave too little money, Lo'atya, it refused to walk home, it would not go back to its owner. Yomachad Inshu Zuga de Sandalei Allah. One day the workers that had rented it forgot a pair of sandals on the donkey itself. Lo'azla de Shaklunu Amino. And he wouldn't go until they remembered and took it off of him, Bahadur Azla, and then it went back home. So again, this is like the Chamor of Pinchas ben Yair, who was a donkey that reflected its owner's integrity and the midat chassidut of its owner, and therefore the chamor itself conducted itself in similar fashion to the owner, and that's the idea that we're going to see in so many of these stories over here of what we call the maase tzaddikim, whereby Hashem has those that serve them, their animals, or those that interact with them, act in a manner that's reflective of their own behavior. Elazar ish birta. Whenever he used to see the Gabbai Tzedaka, the Gabbai Tzedaka used to run away from him or hide from him. Because if anything he had on his person at the time that he bumped into the Gabbai Tzedaka, he would give it all to the Gabbai Tzedaka. The Gabbai Tzedaka was afraid that he was causing Elazar ish birta to become impoverished, because every time he saw him, he would give, he was so generous, he would give away all of his money to the Gabbai Tzedaka. So in general, the Gabbai Tzedaka would avoid him in order not to have him give them all his money. One day he was going to the shuk to purchase a dowry for his daughter, meaning the items that she would take into the marriage. So he took a bundle of money to pay for whatever she needed and to marry her off. And like the normal practice that was going on all the time, the Gabbai Tzedaka saw him, and they took off, or they hid from him, so that he wouldn't give them that money. He got wind of this, or he saw them, he got a glimpse of them, and he chased after them. I'm telling you, I'm making you swear, what are you involved in? What activity or what collection are you involved in? We're dealing with two orphans who are going to get married, and we're collecting tzedakah in order to pay for their wedding and for their means by which they could live. Amalem Havuda says, well, if that's the case, Shehen Kod Min Labiti, I'm going to tell you for sure, for certain, that they go before my daughter. So the idea being that they don't have anybody to take care of them, so I should definitely give the money. My daughter has myself and my wife to take care of her, and I can go out and earn more money, or I can find something else to supply to my daughter. But in the meantime, these Yatom and Yatomad has nobody who is their close relative that's going to take care of them, and therefore it's definitely deserving that they get this money before my daughter. And like was the practice that the Gabbai Tzedaka were afraid of, everything that he had in his hands, everything that was in his person, he gave it to them. He had one zuz that he got left over. He purchased with it wheat. And he put it into the silo. So his wife came along and said to his daughter, what does your father bring back for your dowry? Whatever he brought back, he threw into the silo. Meaning, assuming that the daughter was being somewhat sarcastic or was disappointed because her father only brought back some wheat that he threw into the silo, and she's saying to her mother, whatever he brought back, he threw into the silo. So the mother, or his wife, went to the silo and went to try to open up the door. She saw that the silo was packed full of wheat, and it was coming out of the threshold or by the hinges of the door. It was so full, it was bursting out. And the door couldn't open because there was so much wheat in the silo. So his daughter went to the Beit Midrash, go see what your beloved did for you, meaning a reference to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Let's see what a Kodesh Baruch Hu did for you. You take a shvua again. Rein hekdesh alayich. They are classified as being hekdesh. Vein lach v'hen eleke echad mi'aniyei Yisrael. And that you only have a portion in them like the aniyei Yisrael, like a poor person of Yisrael. So first of all, it seems to me this is also a recurrence of what we saw in the previous story, which is that he didn't want to get benefit from Masen Nisim, something that was miraculous. And therefore he didn't want his daughter taking benefit from it. And as Rashi says here, and we saw before, that's because it's Menachem Yisrael, that it deducts from the merits of the individual, and therefore it's not something that you want to benefit from, it's not something you want to take from Masen Nisim. So in order to prevent his daughter from taking from it or benefiting from it, he dedicated it all to the Aniyim, to the poor. But that's a little strange, only because he did say to his daughter that she was able to benefit from it like another poor person. So the idea being maybe that he wanted to not get benefit from it, and therefore he dedicated it all to the poor. And his daughter was no different than any other poor individual that should get a portion of it like any other poor person, because he had given away all his money, and therefore he is impoverished, and she shouldn't be any less than the other poor people that were going to get a benefit from it, and therefore he offered her that portion of it like any other ani, like any other poor person. The Ivitz points out that this actually is the source for the position of the Rishonim, that Stam Hekdesh in our day, when there is no Mikdash, is Laniim, is for the poor people. Because over here, the only statement that he made was that the weed was Hare Hekdesh Alayich, and the explanation, based on the fact that she was allowed to take it like Aniyei Yisrael, and the way that Rashi explains it, is that it was dedicated to the Aniim. So even though he just simply said Hekdesh, the intention or the implicit Hekdesh here is that which is available for the Aniim. The other question that's raised by the Achronim over here is the fact that we have a principle that's brought up in the Gemara in Ketubot, and Daf Nun, that there was a Takana in Usha, that a person is not allowed to be mevazvez nechasav litztaka, a person is not allowed to expend of his wealth any more than a chomesh, one-fifth of his wealth, to tztaka. And that is so that the individual himself does not become impoverished and then depend on tztaka. There's a limit on how much one person can expend or give away to tztaka. And it seems that over here that Elazar Ish Birta was in violation of this principle. So how do we deal with it? So many quote the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot in Masechet Peah, who says that when it comes to Gemilut Chasidim, Ein La Shiur, that's with regards to things that deal with gufo, doing things with your own person. There's no limit. But with regards to money, there is a limit, and that is one-fifth of your possessions, because you are not obligated to give more than that. And the Rambam says that that's because of the Takanat Usha, that a person can give away one-fifth of their possessions, and that will suffice. But that is only for regular people, that he's not obligated to give more than that. But when it comes to Midat Chasidut, a person wants to act Lifnim Yishurat HaDin, then that person could give even more than a fifth. So that's one possibility that's mentioned by the Achronim, that he was following that position of Midat Chasidut. And even though in Usha there was a takana to limit how much one gave away, that was only how much you're obligated to give away, or what the normal practice is. But someone who has a practice of Midat Chasidut could even go beyond that, and that's based on this Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot. Although that's a very difficult explanation of the Takana and Usha, because the Takana and Usha was to prevent someone from becoming impoverished, and therefore it shouldn't matter whether it's Midat Chasidut or not. I mean, if the person's become impoverished by it, then it should be restricted whether they're doing it as a Midat Chasidut or not. So the Gvura Dari, on the other hand, offers the possibility that there are people who argue on that Takanat Usha, and Elazar Ish Birta was one of those individuals that argued on that position in Usha, and therefore he was demonstrating that here, that he didn't agree with it. The other hand, the Ben Yoyada claims that Elazar Ish Birta lived prior to the Takanat Usha, and since he lived prior to the Takanat Usha, he wasn't subject to it, and he's actually synonymous with the Tana in Avot, Rabbi Elazar Ish Bartuta, which is found in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Zayin, Rabbi Elazar Ish Bartuta, Omer, Tein Lo Mishelo, Shata V'Shelcha Shelo, that you should give all of yours to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because you and everything that you have belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chein V'Davidu Omer, Kimimcha Kol, Yadcha Netanu Lach. So it's clear that he acted according to the paradigm that he set up in Mishnah and Avot, which is that everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, he took whatever possessions he had, and he dedicated them to doing a mitzvah. And that would put him, actually, in the time of the Chachamim in Yavne, based on the fact that Elazar Ish Birta is really Rabbi Elazar Ish Kfar Bartuta, or Rabbi Lezer ben Re'ihuda Ish Bartuta, and he was one of the Chachamim of Yavne, a Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua, who was a peer that was Cholek on Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Ishmael, and that would put him possibly before Takanat Usha, and therefore he wasn't necessarily subject to Takanat Usha. So that's one way, or a possible way, to deal with this issue, is how did he expend all of his money doing these mitzvot. So now the Gemara continues with a number of stories about individuals who were beseeching Hashem for salvation, and it didn't always work out the way that they thought or in the easiest way. And the Gemara has a lessons, I think, that we could see from each of these stories. Rabbi Yehuda Nisia. So Rabbi Yehuda Nisia is a name that is shared by a number of people. There's Rabbi Yehuda Nisia the first, the second, the third. The one that Rashi claims is being noted over here is Rabbi Yehuda Nisia, the grandson of Rabbi. Rabbi the Mesadera Mishnah. So his son was named Rabban Gamliel. His son Rabban Gamliel had a son named Rabbi Yehuda, and he was known as Rabbi Yehuda Nisia. He was an Amora that was a peer, or learned by Reish Lakish. Was in the time of Reish Lakish and learned by Reish Lakish. There is also Rabbi Yehuda Nisia, who's his grandson, and then another one who's his great-great-grandson. But the Rashi claims that it's the first Rabbi Yehuda Nisia. So he was Gozer Atanit because they needed rain. By Rachme, Veloati Mitra. They davened, and the rain didn't come. Amar Kama Ika Mishmuel Aramati, the Yehuda Ben Gamliel.
What a difference there is between Shmuel and Yehuda.
Shmuel Aramati, which is the Navi Shmuel. He's referencing to the Navi Shmuel who asked for rain to come when the people asked for a king during the harvest season to show them that they had done something wrong. So Shmuel was able to beseech Hashem and rain came. And the Yehuda Ben Gamliel is him. He is Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Gamliel, the son of Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi. Oilo Lador Shekein Nitka. Woe is the generation that got stuck with someone like me. Oilo the Mishal Tabi Yamav Kach. And woe is the one whose generation came up like that. Chalash Date. So he was embarrassed. He became weakened from the fact that he wasn't able to beseech Hashem and bring rain, that he didn't have those qualifications, or he didn't have the ability to do that. Vata Mitra. And then the rain came. And we're going to see a number of these stories that indicate that there need to be chalash date, that the person lost hope before the rain came, or the person was demeaned by the fact that the rain didn't come. And I think that is a key element, as we're going to see over and over again, in the ability to daven to Hashem. Someone who davens to Hashem with certainty that they're going to be answered, that's unlikely to bring about an answer from Hashem, because that tefillah is coming from a place of confidence where the individual thinks that they can dictate to Hashem that which happens. On the other hand, if a person comes with anivut, comes with a certain amount of humility before Hashem and is really beseeching Hashem and asking Hashem to please answer, then that's the situation in which Hashem answers, because then that person clearly recognizes that Hashem is the one who's in charge. Hashem is the one who gives and grants, and that person, when they have humbled themselves, can then bring about the answer or the beseeching of Hashem to produce that which they want. And so we're going to see any time that an individual goes with confidence to beseech of Hashem, that many times they're not answered, whereas if they are broken down and humbled by the situation and they realize it's no longer in their hands, that forfeiting of control and realization that it's all in the hands of God, that's what allows the tefillah to be answered. And that's what happened here. That Rabbi Yehuda Nisia was Gozer Tanit, and he felt that he should have been able to bring about the rain because of his stature and because of who he was. And the response, which is the lack of a response to his tefillah, showed that that's not what's going to drive Hashem to bring about the rain. It's only when he broke down and he realized that woe to the generation that has a leader like him, and he's a nobody. Once he realized he was a nobody, that's when Hashem could respond and bring about the rain. The Bein Nesiya Gazar Tanita. The Bein Nesiya, the house of the Nasi, was Gozer Tanit. It seems to be that this was a political position. So sometimes, or many times, there were Tamidei Chachamim that were appointed, and therefore the political side and the religious side were unified under a single leadership like that of Rabbi, who was both the Nasi and as well as the leading scholar of the generation. But sometimes there were people appointed by the governing powers that were there, the foreign government that was there, and it was done because of political favors, it was done because of bribery, but they weren't necessarily ra'ui for that position. They were not necessarily the greatest chachamim of that generation, and that seems to be the case here, that the Bein Nisia was Gozer Tanit, v'lo dinu the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. They didn't notify Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish about the fact that they had put in a fast because of the necessity for rain, And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish weren't aware of the fact the next morning when they got up that they were supposed to be fasting. And the assumption being likely that if they didn't tell Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that many people didn't know about it. The Tzafra Odinu, in the morning, they let them know about it. Amalei Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, so Reish Lakish says, Rabbi Yochanan, halo kabilin alach and la'alan miurta. We learned earlier in the Masechta, in order for it to be a fast day, we have to accept the fast day on the previous day in order for it to be classified as a fast day. Now, the truth is that in terms of fasting, they would have to fast either way, because we saw earlier, if you go from a place that's not fasting to a place that is fasting, you have to fast along with them. So they would have to fast along with the community, irrespective of whether they accepted the fast or not. The real question is whether they could have a tefillat ta'anit, whether they could add in aneinu, whether they could do the tefillat ta'anit, because they hadn't accepted upon themselves to make it into a full-fledged halachic ta'anit. So amalei, anan batrayu garirinan. So Rabbi Yochanan responds to Reish Lakish and says, we are drawn after them, meaning that the Beit HaNasi is the leadership of the community, and therefore we are subject to the rulings of the Beit HaNasi, and if there goes our tanit, even though we didn't personally accept it, since they do it for the community at large and for the benefit of the community at large, we're a part of that community, and therefore it's as if we accepted it by proxy because the Beit HaNasiya is the leadership of the community. Again, here we have another story of the Beit HaNasiya Gazar Tanita, Bloat Mitra. They were Gozer Tanit, and no rain came. Tanulhu Oshaya Zira Demin Chavraya. It's a difficult way to parse what exactly this individual's name is. Rashi claims over here that it's Oshaya Zira. Zira was a qualifier. His name was Oshaya, and it was called the younger one, or the little one, because as opposed to the other Oshaya that was either older than him or bigger than him in the Beit Midrash, it was an identifying feature, the Zira. And then Demin Chavrayo, you could either say means that he's from amongst the Tamidei Chachamim, or Demin Chavrayo could mean that he's from the place, Tosafot says in Chulin, called Chavraya. That's one way to read it. Rashi in Chulin also suggests that his name was Oshaya Zira. That was his full name, and not that it was a adjective describing him or in order to identify him, but that was actually his name. And then again, Demin Chavraya, you could read either way as being from the place of Chavraya or from amongst the Talmidei Chachamim. And he quotes from the Pasuk that's found in Parshat Shlach with regards to the Beitin, the leaders of the generation making a mistake with regards to a halachic issue, and that the generation follows them, and it terms it as Me'enei Aida, the eyes of the community, the eyes of the nation, meaning the leadership, nesta the shkaga. The shkaga was caused by the leadership. So, mashal the kala shibibetavia. It's a parable, an allegory or analogous to a bride that is found in her father's house. Kozman sheneha yafot, as long as her eyes are beautiful, en kogufat svichabidika. Then the remainder of her body needs no checking, because just like her eyes are beautiful, so too the rest of her is beautiful. Enea trutot, if her eyes are problematic, Rashi in other places says trutot means very rounded. And the Gemara uses that as in contrast, that the human eyes are much more narrow, and the animal's eyes, or eyes of some animals, are very rounded. Therefore, it's considered to be a mum. It's a deficit in the appearance of the individual. So therefore, when the eyes have something that's problematic, then the entire body needs checking, because this is just an identifier or a siman that there might be other problems there as well. So what he was suggesting, and Rashi says that it's in the negative formulation, was that the Beit HaNasiya was gozer a tanit and wasn't answered. He says it's not surprising, because since the Beit HaNasiya, since the house of the Nasi were Rishaim, then it's a given that the people that are under their auspices are also Rishaim. So it's no surprise that nobody was answered over here, because they're all Rishaim. And he was saying that the leadership is at fault here, because the failure in the leadership is manifest in the people as well. And just like Me'enei Aida, when you see something wrong with the leadership, that's an indication there's going to be something broadly wrong with the rest of the community. And that's why they weren't being answered. So then the servants of the House of Nasi, who again had some political clout, they were many times given autonomy in terms of adjudication and punishment for the Jews, and so they were able to enforce, and they had Abadim, who were not always the nicest or best. We've seen stories throughout Shas where they did things that were not necessarily so nice, both in the house of the Exilarch as well as the Beit HaNasi. Over here too, they chased down Oshaya Zira, the Min Chavrayo, and they put a turban or a handkerchief around his neck. It's not exactly clear what they did to him, whether they were quasi-choking him, whether they were demeaning him. and they were causing him difficulty. They were ganging up on him because he had not spoken nicely about the Beit Nasi, and they were coming to take revenge or to straighten him out. He said that not to blame the Nasi or the Beit Nasi for the problems that were happening. So Amalei B'nei Mate, so the people of the city of Oshaya Zira de Min Chavrayo, said, Shavke, let him be. Da'anami Mitzarlan, because he does the same thing to us. He bothers us as well. Came to Chazina de Chomilei L'shem Shemayim. But once we realized that everything he was doing was really L'shem Shemayim, was dedicated to Akash Baruch Hu and trying to help us out, Lo Amri Le'amide, we don't bother him anymore. We don't hold him to task. And then we let him do what he wants to do or say what he wants to say because we know that he's doing the right thing. Atunami Shavku, you too should leave him alone. And so by doing that, they were able to free him from the clutches of the Abadim of the Beit Nasi, because even though he was saying things that were negative or disparaging, nevertheless, he was speaking the truth. And he was doing L'shem Shemayim. He wasn't doing it for any benefit for himself or any political gain. He was doing it in order to tell the people to do tshuva. And so the people of the city had realized that over time, even though he had said things that were not so friendly, nice, or polite, but they realized that he was doing it for their own benefit, and so they convinced the Avadim of the Beit Nasi that the same was true with regards to what he had said about the Beit Nasi, that they really need to do tshuva in order that the rain came, rather than blaming him for the fact that he's identifying the problem. So Rabbi Gozer Tanita, Bloatim Mitro. So Rabbi was Gozer Tanit, similar to his grandson. He was Gozer, and it didn't come. Nachet Kamei Ilfa. So then an individual named Ilfa went to be the Shatz, to be the Shliach Tzibor, Amila Rabbi Ilfai, or some say it's Rabbi Ilfai, who went down, Amar Mashiva Ruach. He began to say Mashiva Ruach Nasa Zika, and the wind picked up. Morida Geshem, he said that the rain should come, Atamitra, and the rain came down, meaning it was unbelievable. Samalei Mayavudach. So Rabbi is shocked, like, what do you do that you have the schut to get up there, and when you start to daven, everything happens. Amalei Dayerna Bakushta Dechika. I live in a very impoverished village. The Lebe Chamra Likidusha Vabdalta, that doesn't have wine for Kiddush and Abdallah. Tarachna Vatena Chamra Likidusha Vabdalta. And I make it my business to go and fetch wine so that everybody has wine for Kiddush and Abdallah. And then I'm motzi them with that Kiddush. So it's interesting on a number of levels. First of all, the fact that that was considered to be something that was greater than Rabbi, who we know was a leading personality, was the Masadar HaMishnah, was someone, when the Gemara says that he passed away, an Ava, disappeared from the world because he was such an Anav, and despite all of that, he wasn't able to bring around the rain, and this individual brought wine for Kiddush and Abdallah, wasn't able to bring around the rain. So that might relate to what we saw back two daf ago, which is the fact that maybe Rabbi had more schuyot, and it was just, this is too little for him. He didn't need Rabbi's type of caliber in order to bring around the rain. Somebody like Ilfa, or Rabbi Ilfai, was sufficient to bring it about, and therefore they didn't allow it to come through Rabbi's hands, but rather through this other individual's hands. You could say that maybe it's also connected to the previous sugyot that we saw before, which was that there had to be a certain amount of yeush by Rabbi in order for there to be this coming of the rain. And therefore putting someone else up who was able to bring the rain, that's what was mashpil Rabbi. And that type of hashpalah, or that humiliation that brought about humility, was actually the impetus for the rain coming.
Or to possibly emphasize the importance of helping the tzibur, and therefore these individuals were highlighted for those activities that they engaged in, that they brought about the salvation.
That's number one. Number two is, the fact that he brought wine for Kiddush and Abdallah, and then he was motzi all of them, is very interesting, because where was he motzi all of them? They all ate in their own houses, and you have to do Kiddush b'makom suda. For Abdallah, it's fine that he has wine and he's motzi everybody with one wine, that's fine. When it comes to Kiddush, how is he motzi everybody? So you'll say that he did it in the shul. That's the Gemara in the Terev Berach HaPsachim, Arvei Psachim. The Gemara discusses the practice of making Kiddush in the shul. And there's Rav and Shmuel argue about it, whether a Kiddush Shalom B'Makom Suda is considered to be Kiddush, and that's why it works. Or if Kiddush B'Makom Suda is a requirement, which is the way that we paskin, and therefore only the people who are actually staying in the shul and eating there were Yotze with that Kiddush. So then why over here is this Kiddush working? Because the people are going to go home and eat. And so then how is this Kiddush a good Kiddush for them when he did it on the wine? So some suggest that that institution of making Kiddush in the shul, even when there were no guests, was a kadum, a very early institution. And this is proof of the fact that that was an early institution. Others say that that was the best they could do. And so that Kiddush in tefillah and Kiddush al-yayin in the shul, that was the best they could do. They could make Kiddush al HaPat at home, but at least to have some semblance or remnant of Kiddush al HaKos, he made sure that they had it in shul, so that, not that they'd be Yotze with it, but that they would have this practice in mind, so that if they ever became wealthier or could afford it, that they would have wine for Kiddush. Or you could suggest that the entire village, because they were so poor, and it was dechika, dechelk, and the Gemara is used to mean both pressed tightly together in close quarters, or to be a difficult situation, because they, most cases they are the same thing, that maybe they lived in such close quarters that everybody ate together, and that they pooled their resources to eat together because they were so poor. And if with one Kiddush, he could be motzi everybody in this city. Rav Ikla Lahawatra. Rav went to a city, Gazar Tanita, Velo Atamitra. They instituted a Tanit because they needed rain or whatever the issue was, and the rain didn't come. Nachikame Shlicha de Tzibura. A Shlicha Tzibur went down. Amar Mashiva Ruach, Unishav Zika. You say Mashiva Ruach, and the wind began to blow. Mar Marida Geshim, the rain should come, but Atamitra. And sure enough, the rain fell. Malay Mabudach. So Rav, like Rabbi, understands that this individual has something special, unique about them that brought about the rain. Malay Mikre the Dardekeano. I am a teacher of kids. I'm a teacher in Cheder. And I teach the poor children on par with the rich individuals. Whoever can't afford it, I don't ask them to pay for it. So I teach the rich and the poor. And whoever can pay, pays. And whoever can't pay, doesn't pay. And I have a fish pond in my backyard or by the Cheder. And any child who's having difficulty with reading or participating in the learning, shachdina le minayu, I convince him, I bribe him with the fish, musadrina le, and then I set him up, umasina le, and I relax him, adatavikari, until he comes and joins us, and joins in with the rest of the children in the cheder. So he was successful, both from a perspective of those children that were not participating, he got them to participate, and he also allowed both the wealthy and the poor to equally benefit from his services. And that was a schut that gave him the ability to bring about the rain. And again, you have to ask the same question about why did Rav not able to do that? Didn't he have greater schuyot than this individual? And the same answers we gave for Rabbi would be applicable here by Rav as well. Rav Nachman Gazar Tanita. Rav Nachman also instituted a Tanit. By Rachman, lo atimitra, he davened, and the rain didn't come. Amar Shaglula Nachman. You should take Nachman. Chavotum in a gudalara and throw him from the wall down to the ground. Meaning that, what is Rav Nachman worth if he can't bring about the rain? Chalash date. After that, he said that about himself. He was demeaned and he felt bad. Vatamitra, and then the rain came. So similar to these other situations in which once the confidence is broken, once the person is demeaned, that's what allows the answering of their tefillah and makes their tefillah efficacious. Rabba Gazar Tanita, Bay Rachman Vatamitra. Rabba put in a face of fast. He asked for rachamim, v'lo atimitra, and the rain didn't come. Amulei, v'ab Rav Yehuda, ki ava gazar tanita atimitra. When Rav Yehuda used to do this, the rain would come without any problem. So we're talking about Rav and Shmuel, the first generation of Moraim in Bavel. Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of both of them. And then the generation after that is Rabba and Rav Yosef. So Rabba is a generation after Rav Yehuda. And the people are saying to Rabba, who's the new leader of the generation, that in the old days when Rabbi Yehuda used to do this, everything was fine and the rain come when he davened. And you can't bring about then. I'm like, oh, my Ovid. What can I do? Imishum tenuye. If it's because of learning, ananadifan minayu. We are greater than them in learning. Meaning greater than the times of Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnei Rabbi Yehuda. In the time of Rabbi Yehuda, kol tenuye, all their learning, benizikin avo, was in nizikin, and doesn't sound like from here, all of his Seder nizikin, but rather just Baba Kamo, Baba Metzia, and Baba Batra. The commentaries over here discuss why they learned that, because the Gemara in Bava Batra on Kufayin Hei Amud Bet says, person wants to get to Chokhmah to learn Nizikin, so that's a area that sharpens the person and makes them more of a Chacham. Or from Bava Kama, it says in Daf Lamed, and therefore they focused on Yine Zikim because of that. It could be that they also learned all of Seder Nizikin. That's another possible explanation. And we are engaged in all of the six Sidrei Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda beUksin. Rabbi Yehuda used to reach his sugya that's from Uksin. Now, Uksin is the last Masechta in Masechet Tarot. It's the completion of Shas. So it's likely that he's picking this Masechta because he's talking about something at the far end, the far reaches of Shas. Uksin, which is a Dinei Taharot, to deal with the Shomer Apri and the Yad of Apri, Shomrim, and Yad in terms of conveyance of Tuma, then he dealt with those issues. Aisha shekuveshet yerek b'kdeira, a woman who squeezes out the juices either to pickle or to store the vegetables. Rami Law and some say quoted from this Mishnah, Zeitim shekuveshan b'tarfehen, Torim, if you put olives in with their leaves, then they are tahor. We'll explain both of those in a second. So Amar havayot the Rav Shmuel kachazinur hacha. He used to comment that these are like the questions that Rav and Shmuel had, meaning that that's how difficult they were. And we have, according to Rashi over here, 13 Batei Midrash that are studying Uksin, or in other places Rashi says that they learned Uksin from 13 different perspectives or 13 different Braitot that explained, or Toseftos that explained Uksin. When he took one of his shoes off, the rain would come. And as soon as he was some inuit that he did to himself, that was sufficient. We scream away all day, nobody listens. If it's because it's something that we did, someone have seen that something that I've done wrong or something that I am guilty of, speak up. What can the leaders do? Because the generation that they're leading is not as worthy. So Rabbah puts the blame on the people himself, which is interesting only because the Gemara before with Rabbi Elazar Ish Birta suggested that when there's a problem, the problem is in with the leadership. So Rabbah goes out of his way to show that the problem is not with the leadership because they're learning more than the time of Rabbi Yehuda. And he puts himself out for anyone to make any claims that he's done something wrong or he needs to do tshuva for something, and nobody speaks up. So he said, well, if it's not a problem in the leadership, then it's clearly a problem in the generation. And Rabbi Yehuda's generation was deserving of that salvation. This generation is not deserving of that salvation. Now, with regards to the two Mishnayot that are quoted, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda learned them in Uksin. Uksin is a mesechta at the tail end of Taharot that speaks about the conveyance of Tumah to objects that are ochel. Ochlim are mikabel tuma, and if they are a certain size, of course, the most rishonim, they could also convey tuma. But there are also ancillary items, like what's called a yad and a shomer. A yad is a vehicle or a handle by which to carry the object, and shomer is something that's protective around the food. Those items, a yad and a shomer, are as if they're an extension of the ochel itself, and therefore, if the tuma touches the yad or the shomer, it can convey tumah to the ochel, and vice versa. If the ochel is tameh, it can convey the tumah from itself to other items through the yad and the shomer. So that is the topic that is found in Uksin, in the first Mishnah in Uksin, which discusses the different aspects or qualities and character traits of a yad and a shomer with regards to tumah. So the second citation that's made over here is a Mishnah in the second parak of Uksin, where it says, Zeitin shekavshan b'tarfehen. These olives that were pickled, put into a brine, or tried to be preserved, they were put in with their leaves, tehorim. The reason is, shelo kavashan ela lemar'eh. The only reason that you pickled them and put them there was for their appearance. You didn't put it there because they're the handle or way to carry the olives. You didn't put them there because they protect the olives, or somehow they are a preservative of the olives. Rather, it's simply an appearance matter, which is that they look nicer, or they're easier to sell, or more appealing, or more appetizing when you have the leaves on them. And that's the reason they left the leaves on, and therefore they're not integral to the food itself, and they're not classified, therefore, as a yad or a shomer, and therefore the tumah touches them, it won't affect the olive, and vice versa. If the olive is tameh, it won't affect them to convey tumah outward to other items. So that is topically relevant to Uksin, and that's part of Uksin. Problem is the first citation, which is Aisha shekuveshet yerek b'kdeira. So this Gemara appears in a number of places in Shas. Rashi says different things in different places. One place he says, I don't know where it's found in Uksin. One place he says it's found in Uksin. In our Gemara over here, he says it's found in Taharot, which is the truth. It's found in Masechet Taharot in Seder Taharot. It's found in the second parak, the first Mishnah. But the problem is that it has nothing to do with Uksin. It's a din in Tum'ah and conveyance of Tum'ah through Hechsher the Kabul Tum'ah, which is that the item was primed to accept Tum'ah because a liquid that washed over it. And then that item that is ready to be Mekabul Tum'ah, even though it's dry now, if a person's hands touch that item, since their hands are a sheni the tumah automatically, and it's truma that they're working with, then that sheni makes a shlishi the tumah. That shlishi the tumah on the leaf has no impact on the remainder of the items, so that leaf that's sticking out of the pot on the remainder of the items, because a shlishi does not make a revi'i in truma. On the other hand, if the person touched the leaf where it was wet, then when he touched the liquids, because of a takanat or gzirat chachamim that we spoke about in the past, makes the liquids into a rishon the tumah. The liquids then as a rishon the tumah touch the leaf to become a sheni the tumah. And that leaf is a sheni l'tumah, can then once again make the liquids in the pot into a rishon l'tumah, and then it makes the pot tameh and the remainder of the items in the pot tameh. That's all has to do with the issue of hukshah the kabel tumah and shumah and conveyance of tumah through the darkot, the levels of tumah, and not anything to do with uksin. Therefore, many achronim are puzzled by Rashi's citation to tarot because it's not relevant to uksin. The only thing you can say is that they are quasi-similar because they're both talking about kvisha, about pickling or putting into a brine, as well as the fact that they're talking about part of an item that's conveying to a tumah to another part of the item, but in truth, they're just totally different mishnayot and topics. And therefore, it's a little strange that it's quoted over here. The Sfat Emet makes a far-fetched suggestion that maybe this was another gyusa in uksin, that isha koveshet yerek mikdera v'amila zeitim shekavshan b'tarfehen. And that the difference is the girsa in the Mishnah itself in Uksin as to whether it talks about a woman that is pickling these items or whether it just simply states that these are olives that are being pickled and the din will be the same, but it's just different girsaot in that Mishnah in the second parak of Uksin. The other possibility is that the citation was from Uksin, but it mentioned Tarot before. And so therefore there was confusion that they quoted the Mishnah from Uksin, which is in the second parak in the first Mishnah, but since it had mentioned Tarot also, somebody put a wrong citation into Tarot, parak bet, Mishnah Aleph, instead of Seder Tarot, put it in Masechet Tarot, therefore they ended up bringing that citation in, but otherwise it's a little difficult as to why that is, but the idea being the same in both cases, which is that these are halachot that are in Tarot, that at the time of Rabbah they were experts in, and the time of Rav Yehuda, it was beyond their comprehension or beyond their grasp. And he compares them to the Havayot, to the problems or the issues raised by Rabban Shmuel. And even though Rabban Shmuel lived post the time of the Tanaim, and therefore obviously the questions in Uksin are not Havayot of Rabban Shmuel, but it could be like we saw in the Gemara in Sukkah, with regards to Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, where it says there that he didn't leave anything that was not covered in the Torah, including Havayot de Abaye ve'Rava, the questions that Abaye and Rava, the disagreements that Abaye and Rava had, obviously they are after the time of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai. Ella, it must be that whatever was raised in the time of Abaye and Rava were already addressed, already raised in the time of the Tanaim. They might have had answers to that or had explained it, and then that was forgotten, and then they were re-raised in the time of Abaye and Rava. And you could say the same thing about the Rav and Shmuel, Havayot de Rav and Shmuel, that those questions that they had or the issues that they disagreed about, they were already present or dealt with in the time of the Tanaim, just that they had resolved them or brought resolution to them, but that was later forgotten, and then they were raised again in the time of Rav and Shmuel. And similarly over here, that might be the parallel to Havayot de Rav and Shmuel, which Rabbi Yehuda is familiar with. He's assigning that to the time of the Tanaim or to the Mishnayot because they're difficult, like difficulties or arguments that Rav and Shmuel had. And maybe even they were issues that were raised in the time of Tanaim. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's beyond our comprehension, those issues of Tarot. So now we continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda chazah hanu beitrei, dehavu kaparze birifto. Rabbi Yehuda saw these two individuals that were, parutze means like parutz. They were beyond the bounds. They were doing something that was unacceptable. And the way Rashi explains it over here is that they were throwing bread back and forth between each other, which was a bizoy of the Ochel, which is an indication of their disregard or the fact that there was wealth and plenty available that the individuals no longer gave the proper respect or consideration to the food. And Rav Yehuda is bothered by that and says, Amar Shmamina Ika Sava Ba'alma. Must be that there's too much in the world. There's plenty. There's cornucopia that is filling the world. And that abundance is causing problems because people are not treating food in the proper manner. He looked over there and it turned into a famine. Whether he did this intentionally as a punishment or a way to take away this disregard for food, whether that simply was just the result of his looking there, Yaivene, when he looked there, Havakafna, it just caused a famine because of that which upset him and what he was seeing. Not that he intended to do that, or that was something that he did proactively. Amalei Rabbanan the Rav Kahana, Berei the Rav Nechunya, Shamai. So then the Rabbanan said to Rav Kahana, the son of Rav Nechunya, who was the Shamash of Rav Yehuda, Mar Deshchiyah Kamei, you who spend a lot of time with him, Niashye, the late book with Pitcha, the Samuch Leshukah. You should press him, force him, cajole him to exit from the door of his house that faces towards the Shuk. Asye, he pushed him or convinced him, encouraged him, cajoled him And he went out to the shuk. Chazant Krufaya, he saw there was a lot of hullabaloo. There was a great gathering in the shuk. Amalu my high. Says, what's going on here? Why is there so much ruckus going on here in the shuk? Amarle, akuspa de tamre kaime. Come as daban. They're all fighting over the fact that now there is a bowl full of dates in the shuk that's being sold. Rashi brings an alternative that it was either psolet shel tamarim, it wasn't even dates, it was the residue of the dates after they had been pressed either for their honey, for the silan that was in them, or they were made into beer, and that was the residual that was being left. And they were fighting over this small amount that was coming to the shuk because there was no food that was available. Amar, so Rabbi Yehuda said, he must conclude, Shemamina, kafna molam, there's a famine in the world. Amar the Shemay said to his shamish, shlofni misanai, take my shoes off. Shavle chad misano, he took off one shoe, va'ata mitra, it started to rain. Kimata the mishlof achrina, when he went to take off the second shoe, at Eliyahu v'amarle, Eliyahu came and said, Amar kodesh boruchu, ishalaf tachrina, machrivna le'alma. If you take off the other shoe, I'm going to destroy the world. The whole Gemara is somewhat strange. First of all, why is it that he's going to destroy the world if he takes off the other shoe? Rasha says that it was a chastisement of Rabbi Yehuda because he had caused the Kodesh Baruch Hu to first bring a famine, then bring sova that was not necessary. And therefore, after removing the first shoe, the rain came, but removed the second shoe, they warned him that it was enough. As the Karen Ora says, that might have been just a result, meaning that the first shoe caused it to rain. If he takes off the second shoe, it's going to be an abundance of rain. It's going to flood, and there's going to be so much flood like the time in the Mabul, and that's going to cause the destruction of the world. It would just be a direct outcome of his causing the rain to come, and therefore, Kosh Baruch was warning him, don't take off the other shoe, because it's just going to bring too much rain. You have to be able to control the bracha that you're giving. The removing of the shoes is a form of inoy, of affliction that are associated with the fast days, like Yom HaKippurim, Tisha B'Av, Tanit Zibur. Therefore, just his beginning to do something that involved the inoy was enough to trigger the response Min HaShemayim for the rain to come. And the Mashal says he did this because it's the only noticeable of the five inuyim that would be clear to someone in the shuk that he was doing something different, or because of the possibility that he wasn't mekabel atanit from the day before, and therefore fasting wasn't a relevant inui today, but taking off the shoes was letzara, caused him pain, and that was enough to trigger the response min haShemayim. What's also strange over here is that Rabbi Yehuda is both the cause of the famine, as well as the relief from the famine. And the truth is that he never caused the famine in the first place. There would be no need to have the relief from that famine. If we explained before that it wasn't something that he did intentionally, then it's more understandable over here. It was just a result of him seeing what was going on. On the other hand, if it is a result of him in a proactive manner causing that to happen, he was trying to teach them a lesson about not being mo'es in the brocha and the tova that Hashem is mashpia on individuals. Therefore, when there's plenty, one should not be disrespectful of the food that is being provided or the plenty that is being provided. And one has to always give thanks and appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that benefit, and that came from the second stage where they had to daven to Hashem in order to relieve the famine, and therefore it was a full lesson in that sense. And the fact that the Rabbanim wanted him to go out to the Shuk, the Marsha comments here, as he does also in the Gemara and Shabbat, with regards to Moshe Rabbeinu seeing the Egel, that sometimes seeing is believing, or seeing has a much greater impact emotionally on the individual than hearing. They could have told Rabbi Yehuda about the situation, but they felt that if he saw it for himself, it would have much deeper impact on him, and the result would be much more impactful, and that's why they wanted him to see what was going on, in order that it would move him to do something in order to bring about the end of the famine. I'm Rav Mari Brad de Bat Shmuel, so Rav Mari, the son of the daughter of Shmuel, who was mentioned in a number of places in Shas, and that's because the daughters of Shmuel were taken into captivity, and they ended up marrying their captors, and so there was some questionable relationship that was there, and therefore their yichus came through Shmuel, and the daughter of Shmuel, rather than their father, who wasn't necessarily Jewish at the time of their conception. So, Ana Avakaimna Guda Dinar Papa, I was standing on the banks of the river of Papa, when this all went down, Chazai the Malachei, I saw there were angels, the Damu the Malachei, that looked like sailors or shipmen, the Kamaiti Chala, they were bringing sand, Umalunu the Arbe, they were filling up boats full of the sand, Babakimcha the Smida, and then it turned miraculously into flour. Ate Kuleyama the Mizban, because of the famine, everybody came to buy, so all of a sudden there's this plenty of flour that's being brought on these boats. Amar Lahu, I said to the people that were coming to them, Mehalotis Benun, don't purchase from that which you're seeing here. the Masa Nisimo, because it's something that is miraculous. And as Rashi, who had said on the first Amud, when it comes to miraculous items, Asur la'anot b'masa nisim, it's improper, or one is restricted from benefiting from nisim. Here he says it a little softer. He says, u'bama defshar li'itrachek b'masa nisim yoter tov v'nachon. Here he just says, not it's Asur, but it's better if you can distance yourself, remove yourself from miraculous activities, that one should try as best as possible not to benefit from them. And that was the suggestion over here, because he was telling them to avoid this because of the fact that it was Masa Nisim. It's not clear whether it was Rabbi Yehuda who said it to them or it was Mari brought about Shmuel that said it, but let's assume that it's Rabbi Yehuda who said it to them, and therefore it would be a test as to whether they would listen to Rabbi Yehuda, who was the one who was providing them with the ability to have plenty and the removal of the famine. Macha Achen Arbe Dechite de Parzino. The next day, boats showed up with wheat that was coming from the city or the area of Parzina, and therefore they were rewarded for not taking or partaking of the Maase Nisim. But the next day, the boats full of the wheat or the flour showed up. Now, the question as to why they did this on the previous day, it could have been that it was a test to see if they were mamin b'akosh baruch hu that the famine would end, and therefore they would wait and not take from the miraculous stuff and wait for the next day. It could be that the miraculous wheat was already a sign that it brought the prices down, because people knew now that there was plenty or there was available. And therefore, even though if they didn't partake in it, that already did the job of taking pricing down and making it clear that there was plenty out there. So that was the beginning of the solution, even though they didn't purchase from it or they did not benefit from it. We move on to the next story here. Rava Ikla Hagrunaya, Gazar Tanita Vata Mitra. Another story, Rava went to Hagrunaya, which goes there at Tanit because of the needs of the people, and it didn't rain. Amar Luhu, Bitu Kuleyama Bitainu Taichu. Says everybody should sleep in their fast. I mean, they were fasting all day. And he says you should continue fasting through the night. The Machar Amar Luhu, Mika de Chazachelma Lema. Did anybody see a dream last night? Should speak up and say, Amar Luhu Rabbi Elazar Mar Grunaya. It's one of the locals, Rabbi Elazar says, Lididi Akruin Vechelmi. In my dream, they read me the following. This is a mini form of nivuah that takes place where a person sees a pasuk or something's being read to them or shown to them in a dream. Over here, it seems somewhat nonsensical what it's saying. It's not actually a pasuk, but it's a cryptic statement. Shalom Tav, the Rav Tav, Meribon Tav, Dimituve Metiv La'ame. So again, it's hard to understand what's saying here. So the Marashah explains, Shalom Tov, the Rav Tov, was a message to the Rosh Yeshiva, to Rava, saying that the one who was Gozer the Tanit, Shalom Tov, it'd be good greetings to Rav Tov, to the great Rav, Mituvyo, Shem Mituvo, could be either a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Miribon from the God, Tav Mituve, Mitiv Lame, he brings goodness to his nation, or it could be Miriban Tav, means from the great Rav, from Rava himself, he is the one who's going to cause the benefit to the Am himself, and therefore there will be response to that which was being asked in the Schut of Rava. Amar, so Rava says, Shmamina, with this we conclude from that dream, that many nevuah, et ratzon hi miboy rachme, it's a time of acceptance and supplication for God, miboy rachme, it's a good time for us to daven, boy rachme, they daven, v'ate mitra, and the rain came. Hel gavra, di chayav nagdo bebei dina de Rava, there was this individual who was chayav malkot in the court of Rava, mishum de baal nachrit, because he had intercourse with a non-Jewish woman. Now, that is an isor dirabanan, since the Torah prohibition is only to marry such a woman, but someone who has znut with such a woman is deserving of makat mardut, or makot midirabanan. That's both codified in Shulchan Aruch, in Eben Ezer, Siman Tev Zayin, Sif Aleph, Baal Nachrit, Derech Znut, B'mikre, Chayav Alea, midirabanan, Mishum Nachrit, Mishum Zonah, Makin Oto, Makat Mardut, and the Rambam says the same thing in Hilchot Tisirei Bira, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Bet, and he writes there that the reason is, Gzeira Shem Yavol Yitchatein, because we're worried about them eventually then leading to marriage if they engage in such activity with the non-Jewish woman, and therefore there's Makat Mardut in order to prevent there from being a problem in a Doraita of Hitchanut, marriage between them. Nagde Rava Umit. Rava gave him lashes, and he died from the lashes. Would make sense that it wasn't Rava himself that was doing it, but it was under Rava's auspices or under Rava's supervision that it happened, and therefore he is assigned culpability because he was the head of the court. Shtama Milta Beishavur Malko, word got out to the king of Persia that this had happened. Baalitzurei LeRava, they wanted to afflict Rava, bother Rava, give Rava a hard time, or punish Rava for doing such. Now here authority or autonomy was given to the Jewish courts, up to a certain point, and one of those points might be, or it must have been, that there wasn't allowed to be capital punishment. And therefore, even though corporal punishment might be allowed, capital punishment was not. Therefore, he killed the individual, and that was incorrect. Or, because the individual, or the reason that they were punishing the individual is because he had engaged with an achrit, which would be a little bit offensive to the authorities, and maybe that's why they were upset at Rava. I'm related Ifra Hormiz. Ifra Hormiz was Ime de Shavar Malka Livra. She was the mother of the king. She was the queen. Says to her son. Now, Ifra Hormiz, as Rashi says over here, Hormiz is a shade, is a demon. And Ifra Hormiz means the beautiful one, or the carrying the beauty of the demon. And that was, as Rashi explains over here, that her beauty was similar to that of Hormiz, who was beautiful. Those what in Gemara and Sanhedrin says that Ifra Hormiz is that she had the godlike beauty. Hormiz refers to God, maybe because Hormiz was a Persian god. Maybe that's the association to what Rashi says over here. And Rashi, Masechet Nida, Daf Chof, also mentions the fact that Ifra Hormiz was vacillating on the edge of converting. Therefore, she had good relations or a soft spot for the Jewish community and the Rabbanon. Shavuot was a generic name like Paro Avimelech that was used for kings of Persia. And here it seems to be we're talking about Shavuot Sheni, the second Shavuot, who was the king of Paras in the 4th century. And he ruled for 70 years, but he came to the throne when he was very young. And therefore, his mother had heavy influence over him as well as the kingdom, especially in his younger years, where she was basically the guardian and the one dictating what was happening. And she had a good relationship with some of the Chachamim. We have stories in Bava Batra about her giving money to the Chachamim to distribute. And since she had good relations with the Chachamim, she imparts to her son in favor of the Jews and not to punish Rava. Don't get entangled with the Jews. Because whatever they ask from their master, I mean from God, he gives to them. That Hashem is always responsive to their requests. Amalah Mahi. What example do you have of that? How do you know that? So she says, "Bayin rachmei v'ati mitra." They daven for rain, and it happens, and rain comes. That's only because they do it in the rainy season. Let them ask for rain or pray to Hashem today. Tkufa tamuz, in the middle of the summer, by the summer solstice. Let them mitra and see if they can bring rain now. Then we'll know if they can really get God to do what they want. Shalchalei the Rava. So she sent to Rava. Kavendatech ubay rachme to let them mitra. Focus your attention. Daven well and bring rain. And obviously this was going to save his life. This was going to get Rava out of trouble with Shavar Malka. Ubay rachme to let them mitra. So he did that. He beseeched Hashem, asked for mercy, and the rain didn't come. So he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, God. And now he quotes from a pasuk in Tehillim, Elokim, Bo'ozneinu Shamanu, Avoteinu Sipru Lanu. God, we heard with our own ears, and our forefathers told us about this. Po'el Shepalatu B'mehem B'mekedem. All the wondrous things that you did in the early years. Va'anu B'neinu L'reinu, but we ourselves never saw it. And the reference to the old days might be a reference to Shmuel, who brought down rain in Tammuz in the time of the harvest, when Bnei Yisrael acted inappropriately for asking for a king. Rain came, so much rain in the summertime that the gutters of Tzipori flowed into the Tigris River. It seems to me that Tzipori is probably not the right girsa over here. Could be based on the Gemara's assumption in other places that when it rained in Eretz Yisrael, that filled the rivers of Bavel, because Eretz Yisrael was higher elevation and the water flowed down to Bavel. But still, the way the expression runs over here, and the rain that was coming from Rava, it would make more sense, and you can see that in the Masorah Shas, the possibility that the Girsa was Marzaveh de Mechuza, which was the city of Rava, and therefore the gutters in Mechuza filled so much that they started to pour into the Tigris River, and therefore Rava was successful at getting Hashem to bring rain, and responding to the mother of the king's request that he bring rain at this time, and impressing Shvor Malka, and obviously saving his life, or saving himself from government authorities. Ata Avua, Itchazilei Bechelme. Rava's father shows up to him in a dream. It's a rhetorical question, but is there someone who bothers HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much? Meaning that what right do you have to cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu to change the laws of nature and bring rain in the summertime in order to take care of your needs? So Rava was suggesting that he was in the same boat, or it should be the same situation. Hashem should bring rain, just like it happened in the time of Shmuel. Whereas his father comes down and says that it wasn't exactly the same situation. Because in the time of Shmuel, the rain came for all of Bnei Yisrael, all of Klal Yisrael, whereas here, the rain was only coming to protect Rava from the consequences of what had happened. So his father says to him, move your place, don't sleep or don't sit in the same place that you normally do. Shani duchtei, he did not sleep in his bed that night. Macha ashkechei, demir shem purai v'sakinei. So the next day that his bed was covered in knife marks from some of the shedim coming and trying to stab him, trying to kill him. You know, he had done something that was considered to be out of the norm, something that was unacceptable. He did it again to save his own life and to protect himself, but it was felt that that was just too much that he asked for, and therefore he was subject then to retribution by the shedim for overstepping his bounds. Whether Rava should just have davened for salvation and not for rain, that was something that was outside of the normal teva, or whether Rava should just ask for a small amount of rain, not like abundant rain, like in the time of Shmuel, either one of those might have been a better solution to the problem, and therefore he was taken to task for upending the nature of the world in order to protect himself. By changing his place, he avoided that, and his father saved him from that fate. The Rav Papa Gazar Tanit of Loati Mitra, he put in place a Tanit for rain, and the rain didn't come. Chalash Libei, he became physically weakened from the process of fasting. So therefore, Shraf Pinka the Daisa, he gobbled down a spoonful or a bowl full of porridge, and then he davened, flew out the mitra, and then the rain didn't come. And you can see here in the Masorah Hashas that he brings from the Girsa Aruch, that it's Ushparte Perush Hushemi Mosh or Rapapa. It was Rapapa's mother's name, which would mean that Rav Nachman and he were either half-brothers or brothers, and he was somewhat chastising, poking fun at Rav Papa, and says, Yisarif mar pincha achrite de daisa. Maybe if you took another spoonful, another bowl full of daisa, ata mitra, then the rain would come. In that he was pointing out that Rav Papa did the wrong thing here, which is that he ate first and then asked for rachamim afterwards. Now, even though he was weak and he needed to eat something, either he should have eaten less, just enough to restore himself to his former state and not to fill himself with so much, or he should have just davened quickly and then eaten afterwards. The fact that he reversed the order, or that he had so much, he pokes fun of him and puts a dig in and says, well, why don't you have more? Maybe if you eat more, you'll end up, the davening will be answered. Ichsif, he was embarrassed by that, the chalash date, and he was demeaned and became despondent. Va'ata mitra, and then the rain came, similar to all the stories that we saw before, whereby the humbling of the individual is what brings about the rain. So now, the last story for today is Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, v'kazo be'orcha. He was traveling. Ata mitra, rain came. Amar lefanav. Ribono shalom, he says before God, kol olam kulo benachat v'chanina betzar. Everybody else is comfortable, and Chanina, meaning Chanina ben Dosa, is uncomfortable. I'm traveling, and the rain is a big disturbance, and it makes it difficult for me to travel. Those days where they didn't have paved roads, and they didn't have wagons, the rain was made it very difficult to travel. And so Rabbi Chanina is saying, I'm in difficulty, but the rest of the world is benachat. It's not clear here why the rest of the world is benachat. They probably needed the rain for their crops, but maybe they were benachat because they were already home or they were in their houses. Pasuk Mitra, the rain stopped. Kimato Lebeite, when he reached his destination, when he got home, Amar lefanav, Ribono Shalom, Kol Olam Kulo Betzar. Everybody else is in a difficult situation, but Chanina benachat, and I should be okay. Now, why Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was okay, either because he had finished his traveling, and therefore he was okay now, or because we're going to see later on in the Gemara that Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was enough for him with a couple of carobs to get through the whole week, and he didn't eat very much, and therefore he didn't need the rain because he either didn't own fields, or he didn't need fields, or he didn't need any food. On the other hand, everybody else is bitzar because everybody else needs to eat, and everybody else has fields, and therefore they need the rain. And Hata Mitra, and Hashem responds, and the rain comes. Meaning that Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, as we're going to see in the upcoming Gemaras, is like a Hasidish Rebbe with Maisei Hasidim or Maisei Tzadikim, where many of these events take place, and he's able to, like Chonia Magel before, who was able to cause rain to come, rain to stop, meaning that he had a direct line to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and these are unusual individuals. Amar Rav Yosef, Mahanya leit slota de Kohen Gadol, Gabi Chanina ben Dosa. How much help or how much good was the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol versus Rav Chanina ben Dosa? So Rav Yosef is referencing to the Gemara in Yoma that says that the Kohen Gadol, upon exiting from the Kodesh HaKodeshim and Yom HaKippurim, used to daven a small prayer, which is brought right over here, the Tanan, the Mishnah, Mitpalel Tfilak Tzarah B'Bayit HaChitzon. After he exited the Kodesh HaKodeshim, he used to say a small prayer. And the reason he used to do a short tefillah, not have Klai so worry about the fact that he had possibly passed away in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. My Metzalei, what did he pray? Ravim Barada, Ravo Barada, Damrei Tarvayo, Mishmei the Rav Yehuda, they will say in the name of Rav Yehuda, Yiret Tzomo Fenech Hashem Elokeinu, should be your will, God, Shetei Hashana Zo, that this year should be Gshuma Ushchuna, rainy and hot. When it says Shchuna, Maliotehi, heat waves, and being hot is not a benefit, why would you ask for it to be hot? Ad Rabba Griutahi, it's a negative. So why would you make that request? Ela im shchuna, if it is dry and hot, take Shumah Tulah. To offset that, it should be rainy and there should be plenty of dew in order to upset that. And you should not accept the prayers of the travelers who don't want it to rain, and that'll cause problems for everybody who needs the rain. So it's the Kohen Gadol says, don't listen to those travelers because they don't want rain, but that's not what Klal Yisrael needs. And yet, what we see here is, B'chanin and the Dosa is successful while he's traveling at stopping the rain. And that's what Rabbi Yosef says. How much did the prayer of the Kohen Gadol help when it came to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa? Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was able to override that and cause the rain to stop. As Rashi notes over here, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa is a Tano. And he's a Tano at the late period of Bayit Sheni. So he was alive when the Beit HaMikdash was still extant. And therefore, he was offsetting or undermining the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol that talks to his power and connections with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rav Acha Brei D'Rova, Mesayim Mishmei D'Rav Yehuda, Rav Acha Brei D'Rova ends the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol when he exits the Kodesh HaKodeshim in the name of Rav Yehuda. So it's all brought in the name of Rav Yehuda as to what the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol was. Lo'yadei Avid Shultan Beit Yehuda, should not be lost the rulership or the monarchy of Beit Yehuda. And your nation should not have to depend on each other for panasa, not on others for their panasa. They should all be autonomous, independent, and able to make their own panasa without depending on others. It's interesting that Gvur Dari over here raises the issue as to how was it possible that the Kohen Gadol davened in Aramaic. Because in general, the Gemara says that we don't daven in Aramaic because then the Malachim aren't able to help us because they don't understand Aramaic. Therefore, not able to help our tefillot to reach a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and therefore we don't daven in Aramaic. One possibility is that when you're directly in contact with Hashem, like for instance the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Yud Beit Amud Bet, which speaks about this, says that when you daven for a choleh, since the Shekhinah is shora on by the head or by the pillow of the choleh, then you can speak directly to Hashem, you can address Hashem directly, and therefore you don't need the intermediary of the Malachim, and you can speak in Aramaic. And that might be the situation here, because we're dealing with the Kohen Gadol near the Kodesh HaKodeshim on Yom HaKippurim, so it's a direct line to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Or the other possibility is to distinguish between individuals who can't daven in Aramaic, as opposed to the Tzibor, who doesn't need the intercession of the Malachim to help them out, therefore they can daven even Aramaic. And that is why the tefillot of Yukum Perkan Min Shemaya and Brich Shmei, which are said in davening on Shabbat, are only said when they are done b'tzibur. But as the Mishnah Berurah brings down, if one davens b'yechidut, he should skip those parts that are in Aramaic, because those are tefillot that are only appropriate for the tzibur as a whole, because they are in Aramaic. All right, we're going to stop here at three lines from the bottom of Chaf Dalet Amud Bet.